Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 7, Chapter 8, Text Number 11. Sri Hiranyakashipu Uvacha Vyaktam Tvam Martu Kamma Asi Yahe Atimatram Dakatase. Mumorshunam He Manda Atman Nanu Siu Viklabaha Giraha Sri Hiranyakashipur Uvacha Vyaktam Tvam Matu Kamosi Yotimatram Vikatase Mumurshunam Hi Mandatman Nanusyur Viklavagira Sri Hiranyakashipu Uvacha Vyaktam Tvam Martu Kamosi Yotimatram Vigatase Mumurshunam hi mandatman Nanu syur viklavagiram Sri Hiranyakashipu uvacha Vyaktam tvam matu kamosi Yotimatram vikatase Mumurshunam hi mandatman Nanusyur viklavagiram Ladies, please. Sri Hiranyakashipu Uvacha. The blessed Hiranyakashipu said, Vyaktam, evidently, Tvam, you, Matu Kammaha, desirous of death, Asi, are, Yaha, one who, Ati Matram, without limit. Vikatase, are boasting as if you had conquered your senses, whereas your father could not do so. Mumur Shunam, of persons who are about to meet immediate death. He, indeed, Manda Atman, O unintelligent rascal, Nanu, certainly, Siu, become, Viklava, confused, Gira, the words. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. Hiranyakashipu replied, you rascal, you're trying to minimize my value as if you were better than me at controlling the senses. This is over-intelligent. I can therefore understand that you desire to die at my hands, for this kind of nonsensical talk is indulged in by those about to die. Please repeat. Hiranyakashipu replied, you rascal. Oh, a little bit more fury. You rascal. There you go. You are trying to minimize my value, as if you were better than me at controlling the senses. This is over-intelligent. I can therefore understand that you desire to die at my hands for this kind of nonsensical talk is indulged in by those about to die. Purport. It is said in Hitopadesh Upadesho Markanam Prakopya Na Shantaye, which means, if good instructions are given to a foolish person, he does not take advantage of them, but becomes more and more angry. Prahlad Maharaj's authorized instructions, why were they authorized? By whom? Yes. They were authorized by Narada Muni, and Narada Muni got them from whom? Yes. And Lord Brahma got them from whom? Yes, from Lord Vishnu. Prahlad Maharaj, authorized instructions to his father were not accepted by Hiranyakashipu as truth. Instead, Hiranyakashipu became increasingly angry at his great son, who was a pure devotee. This kind of difficulty always exists when a devotee preaches Krishna consciousness to persons like Hiranyakashipu, who are interested in money and women. The word Hiranya means gold, and Kashipu refers to cushions or good bedding. Moreover, a father does not like to be instructed by his son, especially if the father is a demon. Prahlad Maharaj's Vaishnav preaching to his demoniac father was indirectly effective. For because of Hiranyakashipu's excessive jealousy of Krishna and his devotee, he was inviting Narasingadev to kill him very quickly. Thus he was expediting his being killed by the Lord himself. Although Hiranyakashipu was a demon, he is described here by the added word Shri. Why? The answer is that, fortunately, he had such a great son as Prahlad Maharaj. Thus, although he was a demon, he could attain salvation and return home back to Godhead. Om Agyana Dimirandasya Gananjana Shilakaya Chakshur Unmalitem Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance, and my spiritual master opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisances unto his lotus feet. Very fascinating situation. Extremely so. This little 5-year-old boy who has received the pure teachings of his spiritual master, Narada Muni, while he was in the womb of his mother, is preaching them perfectly. Not only is he preaching them perfectly, but he's preaching them with full understanding, with full appreciation, with full love, with full dedication. How do we know this? Because as he preached to his little 5-year-old friends, they listened in a spellbound fashion. Not only did they listen to what Prahlad Maharaj had to say, but as it says in the early verses of this chapter, they accepted them wholeheartedly. They accepted them and also wanted to practice those teachings. They knew the difference between what they had been taught, which was all illusory, coming out of ignorance, and what Prahlad had taught, which was coming out of true and pure knowledge. How did they know this? Well, Prahlad Maharaj, as we have learned from previous chapters, was always ecstatic, no matter what his situation was. Whether they were throwing him off a mountain, throwing him under the hooves of an elephant, poisoning him, subjecting him to severe cold, subjecting him to extreme heat, subjecting him to blasting winds, all of these different means of trying to kill him, Prahlad Maharaj was unaffected. He was undisturbed. He couldn't care less because he was fully convinced that whatever was happening to him was a direct result of Lord Krishna's or Lord Vishnu's mercy upon him. He was fully convinced. He had 100% faith. There wasn't the slightest doubt. Whatever you wish to do with me, embrace me, kill me, fine with me. Because whatever you do, Lord, is good for me and good for the world. This was his understanding. This was his mentality. This is the way he navigated his life. So is it any wonder that this boy who was filled with ecstasy, filled with peacefulness, filled with confidence, boldness, inner strength, such boldness that he could challenge that person who is considered to be the most powerful person, invincible person in the world, namely in this universe, his father. When his father would just raise his eyebrows, the demigods would quiver and shake. He was frightening. He could become furious. So he was a formidable person. And yet this little boy stands up to him and tells him, "My dear father, you're really wasting your life. You really shouldn't be saying and doing the things that you're doing. You're a family man. You're attached to your family. You're attached to your power. Why don't you just go to the forest, take up the practice of worshiping Vishnu, and really become a true person, become an illuminated person, a God-realized person, and experience real happiness. What are you wasting your life for?" Can you imagine a little five-year-old boy coming, facing his father like that? Doesn't care what his father is going to say. Knows that he's speaking about the person whom his father considers to be the enemy. His father considers Lord Vishnu enemy, and therefore by extension considers his son to be an enemy. "My son is opposing my political arrangements. I'm opposed to the demigods because they feature and they support Krishna. And my son is joining them? How dare him! I'll kill him." He had four other sons, so he wasn't so worried. The dynasty could be passed on. So, therefore, Hiranyakasipu is now at this particular point in the story, is wondering, this little child of mine who stands up to me, where did he get this power? Who gave it to him? Now, Hiranyakasipu knows that he himself gained the power by standing on his tiptoes for 100 years in time of the demigod, his arms up, his eyes raised, for years and years. And his flesh was gradually eaten away by the ants and by other insects. But he was so determined to be the most powerful person in this world, so determined to be able to kill Lord Vishnu, who had killed his brother and to whom he had such vengeance. He wanted to kill Lord Vishnu to satisfy and please his brother as a way of showing his brother Hiranyaksha, that, yes, he deserves to be killed. So he stood there for 100 years in the time of the demigod, which is thousands of years. And so determined that his flesh was eaten away, all you saw was a skeleton. Now, normally, a skeleton can't stand by itself. It stands by virtue of the muscles that support it and enable it to stand up. But the power of his mind running through his bones was somehow enabling that skeleton to stand up with the arms upraised. And smoke was coming out of his head. He was so determined. He was so furious. He was so firm, so resolved to kill this Vishnu. And here now, his son talking about Vishnu as if he's a good guy, a good person. So Hiranyakashipu is very angry. And he asks him, he's wondering actually, where did he get his power? I got mine from Lord Brahma's boon. Where did he get his power from? It's perplexing. It's bewildering. It's mind-boggling that a little child could have so much power. And he didn't do anything. He just grew up in the household. Of course, little did Hiranyakashipu knew that he had gained the cream of Vaishnav instructions from Narada Muni, his guru. And he fully understood them, and he was now practicing them. And so, because Hiranyakashipu was a very envious type of person, on the one hand, he knew everyone feared him. On the other hand, he sees this little boy who doesn't fear him. And he's wondering, does he have more power than I do? Is that possible? Lord Brahma said that nobody would be able to kill me. And I have not been able to kill this little child. It's bothering him. He's tried so many ways to kill them, and he can't be killed. Now, Hiranyakashipu himself can't be killed by the normal means, by demigods, by human beings, by animals, by water, by the elements. Nobody could kill him. And here, the same thing with his son. And his son didn't do anything. So it's very, very perplexing. It's upsetting. It's disturbing. And he just wants to kill this child, get him out of the way so that he can go on with his political agenda. Because the child is acting like a thorn in his side. So he asks him, where did you get your power from? Who gave this to you? Where did from whom? So a little Prahlad answers, he says, I got it from the same person you got yours. He says, and who is that? Brahma? He says, no, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Vishnu. My enemy? No, he's not your enemy. He's not your enemy. He loves you. Vishnu? Yes, but you're too blinded by the illusory energy, by the ignorance that controls you to be able to see that. Lord Vishnu loves everybody. He has no friend. He has no enemies. He loves everyone, including you. You rascal, you're trying to act as if you're better than I am. So then what does he do? He takes out his sword and he says, where is this Vishnu? And little Prahlad says, Vishnu is everywhere. Anywhere, wherever you look. Oh yes, then where is he? Show me him. Is he in this pillar? That pillar there. Is he in this pillar? And he says, yes, he is in this pillar. Oh, show me him. Where is he? He says, he's right there. He's inside. So he pulls out his sword and he takes it and he smashes it against the pillar. And he says, where is he? He's not there. And as he's saying this, there's a rumbling sound which comes from inside the pillar. And then he wonders, what is that sound? You see, Lord Vishnu doesn't sound like that. It's a lion sound. So, as we know from the story that the lion, Lord half-man, half-lion, he rumbles and scares Hiranyakashipu. And then finally, he just breaks out of the column. And there, we can all look at the picture in the back, and we can see there is Lord Nrsingadev at the final. That's the climax. So, of course, as we will discover in the following pages, that there was an amazing battle here, in which Hiranyakashipu still thinks that he can. I mean, he's been training thousands of years for this battle. Well, how can he lose? This is what he's thinking. He's got this overweening confidence that he must be able. So although Lord Nrsingadev is hulking and huge, he's got these teeth, sharp teeth. The mane is all over. His eyes are blazing, just like in the picture there. So the fight begins, and I need not tell you that after a certain amount of time, of course, Hiranyakashipu took his club. He tried to beat Lord Nrsingadev with his club, and it had absolutely no effect. In fact, at one point in the battle, Hiranyakashipu had the foolishness, the audacity, to think that because the Lord allowed him to escape from his lap, that, ha, 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 he's afraid of me. He can't beat me. So he figured that he's a better fighter. So he took a few moments of rest. Then he came back to fight. Actually, the way it's described very nicely in the translation and in the purport, that the Lord was playing with him as a cat plays with a mouse. And he allowed him to just slip out of his hands, to give him a false sense of confidence. And then they came back and they were fighting again. And it didn't take long for the Lord to pick up this Hiranyakashipu, put him on his lap, take his nails, dig them into the abdomen, and rip the abdomen apart and pull out the entrails and then take those entrails, put them around his neck like a japa mala, you know, and there he was, and Hiranyakashipu was just, as we see in the picture, dead. Yeah, as you can see, all the entrails around him, and he was making it very clear that this person, this demon, had absolutely no chance of coming back. So there we see, it's a very instructive story to all of us. I know I myself, I know so many others, can at sometimes, because we achieve something, we gain something, we become something, people praise us, people honor us, people glorify us, applaud us, celebrate us. There's a natural tendency to feel that you're better than what you were. You're bigger than what you were. You're greater than what you were. And then it goes to the next stage of pride. I'm greater and better than some of these other people who can't do what I'm doing. They're not getting the praise. They're not getting the glory. They're not being honored. So I must be superior to them. That's the next stage of pride. But it happens, you know, very subtly in the mind. And then one starts looking at others as inferiors and starts assuming false positions of authority. Begins ordering people here, there, do this, do that, because he thinks he's better, thinks he's bigger, thinks he's greater. So when this happens, what happens is that whatever power, whatever greatness, whatever ability that we had to manifest or express that which we're being glorified for or honored for, is slowly but surely withdrawn by the Lord. And as that power is withdrawn, the person generally feels a sense of, he doesn't feel the fullness that he had when the Lord was manifesting his power through that particular individual. Because it's being withdrawn. And when it's withdrawn, one begins to feel empty, shallow, vacant, and pleasureless. And we know that when a person feels like that, he needs to do something, needs to take something to feel some kind of satisfaction. Because he's feeling dissatisfaction, feeling depression, feeling dejection, feeling almost hopeless. So what do you do? So they may take some liquor, whiskey, may take some drug, cocaine, or so-called ecstasy, or PCP, or any of these different drugs to feel like he is a person again. Yeah, now he feels he's got this rush going on. He's got that old feeling again until it disappears, and then he's got no feeling again. Now he has to take more and more and more until he becomes so dependent upon this that he's willing to do anything to get the fix. He'll lie. He'll steal. He'll manipulate. He'll assault. He'll battery. He'll even kill. Steal his money from his own mother's pocketbook, as I've heard so many stories. Yes. Persons who were hung up on drugs, they'd say to their mother, can you give me $5 or $10? You know, I need to get some food for myself. She said, food? What kind of, you got the refrigerator's full of food. So then he said, all right, never mind. And then when she wasn't looking, he would just steal whatever he could get out of her purse. So this is, in other words, all sense of conscience is gone. All sense of conscience is lost. And some of these people think, but this is spiritual. I'm feeling high. I'm feeling up. I'm feeling really great. It has to be spiritual. Yeah, and then you go and you steal from him. You pickpocket here. You rob the bank. It's all very, very spiritual. It's right out of the Ten Commandments. Thou shalt not steal. Thou shalt not kill. Thou shalt not disrespect thy mother and father. So you can see the terrible situation. Therefore, the most important aspect that we can gain from this is that we have to pray very hardly, very strongly. Oh, my Lord, please do not allow me to become more proud than I already am. We should never think that we're not proud. That's the first wrong error. As long as you think that you're proud, there's hope for coming down from pride, false pride. I'm better, I'm higher, I'm greater, he's nothing, I'm something. As long as you think that we have this, you can pray, my Lord, please help me to overcome this overweening pride. Because it's going to wreck me. There is an old saying that pride goes before the fall. And I saw so many illustrious saint-like persons in our movement who could do amazing things. But pride took over their lives. And when pride took over their lives, what happened? They felt the same emptiness, the same nothingness. And they needed to supplement their life. Because when you feel empty, as I just said, you need to take something. So they went back to taking drugs. They went back to illicit sex. Some did gambling. And later on, some even went back to meat eating. People who had been living a saintly life. Because when you're feeling empty, you need something to keep going. And that's why you see this liquor industry, the drug industry, is so filled with zillions and zillions of dollars. Because they simply capitalize on the weaknesses of people. And the government allows it to go on because the government leaders, they also take it. So because they take it, how can they make laws against taking, you know, alcohol? Now they're trying to make a law to legalize marijuana. And in some places, it already has been passed. Although the U.S. government does not allow it. So this is the degradation of Kali Yuga. We are very, very fortunate. How fortunate? We have the opportunity not only to rescue ourselves. As long as we don't have this vicious, intrusive, all-conquering pride, as long as we don't have that, and we develop humility, and that's something we get from Krishna as a grace. It's not something external. It's not something that you wear on your sleeve or wear certain clothing or you perform certain gestures and that makes you humble. You actually have to feel how great, how glorious, how wonderful Krishna is, how amazing he is, and how insignificant, how small, how little, how nothing I am next to Krishna. And whatever I have, whether it's speech, whether it's some ability, whether it's some talent, whatever I have, it's all coming from the mercy of Krishna. Without his mercy, I could not get anything. Absolutely zero. So anything I'm accomplishing, I'm acquiring, I'm achieving is coming by Krishna's mercy. So my dear Lord, let me never think that I am the doer. It's all coming from you. One has a right to perform his duty, but is not entitled to the fruits of action. Never consider yourself to be the cause of the results of your activities. So who is the cause? The cause is Krishna. And if Krishna is the cause of our activities, then it never should be an idea in our mind that we have in some way have achieved something. Because I did it. This is my work. Now you can't even breathe without Krishna. You can't see without Krishna. You can't speak without Krishna. You can't move your arms, your legs. You can't have any working intelligence without Krishna. Krishna is the end-all, the be-all, the center of all our achievement and acquirement. Krishna is all in all. And the more we see this, the more we become naturally humble. Because humility is nothing more than the recognition of how great Krishna is and how insignificant, how small, how nothing, how worthless, how useless, how mindless and brainless I am next to him. Yes, there may be other human beings that I'm more intelligent than. What of it? That intelligence will be lost at the time of death. My big time intelligence. By the time I'm 70, I get dementia. I can't even remember my own name. There goes your big time intelligence. These material assets or acquirements are worthless in terms of taking pride in them. But what should we take pride in? We should take pride in the fact, number one, that we have Srila Prabhupada as our great mentor, our great teacher, our great guide, director, that he has given us this wonderful Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita. We should feel great that we have such a person who is guiding us and directing us, that he is he represents Krishna. We should feel great that we are part of a movement which glorifies Krishna. Not that we're just better than this movement and that movement, but great in the sense that Krishna is showing us his grace. He's giving us his guidance. He's giving us his love. Therefore, yes, we should be very happy to have that. And we should do everything we possibly can to try and be worthy of that which we can never be worthy. And what is that? Devotional service. Ready to give up our lives. Srila Prabhupada was ready to give up his life. He had two heart attacks on the Jaladuta boat, and he still stayed. Didn't care, and 11 years later finally left. Our position has to be that this body is nothing except for no other purpose than to love Krishna, serve Krishna, give it up for Krishna, let it die for Krishna, and let Krishna take it as our little humble offering. And in that way, the body, the mind, the intelligence has a purposeful use. And we go out of this world, back home, back to Godhead, because we have spent it, we have dedicated our lives to trying to please the spiritual master, to trying to please Krishna, by expressing our love to him, by not caring for our body with respect to service for him. Let what come may. Let us try to be and follow in the footsteps of Prahlad Maharaj, who simply depended upon Krishna in all activities, just depend upon me and work always under my protection. In such devotional service, be fully conscious of me. If you become conscious of me, you will pass over all the obstacles of conditioned life by my grace. If, however, you do not work in such consciousness, but act through false ego, you will be lost. So Krishna tells us right there, depend upon me. If you depend upon me, I'll protect you. And when you're protected by me, no one can harm you. So please, just dedicate your life to me, Krishna says. Devote your every moment to me, as Srila Prabhupada says. Never stop thinking of Krishna. Always remember him. Never forget him. And this way, we will become God conscious and go back home, back to Godhead. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Thank you. Mukunlal, excuse me, Maharaj, sorry about that. If Maharaj shows affection, then I'm sure that Krishna is being pleased. Thank you. Is there any questions or comments that anyone would like to make at this? Oh, well, thank you very much, Maharaj. It must have something to do with me looking at you throughout this talk. So, anyone? Yes, I see a hand up, please. You might want to come a little closer because, unless you're going to shout.
Yeah, I'll just shout.
Okay, go ahead, shout. No. Anyone else? No more? No question? Oh, I see. Sachitanoy. Yes, he always has some intelligent questions. Can somebody, do you have a mic? Is that not working? Let the persons, otherwise I have to repeat the question for the persons on the internet. Go ahead.
Who was that question?
Yeah, Sachitanoy. Right.
Thank you, Prabhu. Very nice class. I was just mentioning that about 34 years ago, I was a new devotee and someone knocked at the door of the temple who was a guest. The first question he had was, he just peeped through the window. He said,
what?
He just looked through the door and He said, what does it take to be the topmost man here? What are the steps that I have to go through to be the topmost man? And this is the first time And I thought, what a question. Anyway, so according to the lecture, the way you describe it and everything, it was so wonderful and beautiful. What becomes a little bit scary sometimes is that it appears that even in a spiritual organizations, when you become to be either a sannyasi, a guru, temple president, GBC, it's a very dangerous line there in which if you're not acting properly, then a big catastrophe can happen. So maybe can you just mention a little bit more of that? Because although we worship that, we actually want that. All of us, we want that. But at the same time, as you mentioned before, you've seen so many things happen.
Yes, thank you. It's a very, very good question, a good point. I'll try to be as brief as possible because we are going over time. The important point is this, is that wherever we are, whether we're just a new bhakta or whether you're an initiated devotee, whether you have second initiation, whether you have a position in the temple, it really doesn't matter. What it really matters is that we become, that's the purpose of a talk like this and of books of this sort, is that we have to recognize the fact that we can fall at any moment. Srila Prabhupada used to say, you American boys and girls, you're not fearful of Maya enough. You seem to think you can defeat her, you can beat her. She's so powerful. I'm always depending upon Krishna as a result of that knowledge. So the first thing, we have to be aware of the fact that we are weak. Our weakness is inherent, but we can become strong by depending upon Krishna. But we always have to remember, that's his strength, not mine. As soon as we again begin to identify, this is me, this is mine, this is all my accomplishment, my acquirement, we're lost. So we need to pray every day and often throughout the day. My dear Lord, please let me always realize how great, how glorious, how wonderful you are, how small, insignificant, worthless I am, no matter what anybody says, no matter how much applause I get, no matter how much people celebrate, no matter how much people glorify me, write about me, film me, do all these things which make me appear to be important, valuable, great, when all this will one day be lost and forgotten. Let me never forget this most important point, that I am nothing without you. Therefore, all this that's coming belongs to you, not to me. That's the main point. And if we keep this in mind, it belongs to Krishna, we'll be saved. Safe. But as soon as you begin to think, I am this, I am that, I am this, you lose your peace, you become passionate, you become contemptuous, you become hostile, you become warlike, and before you know it, you're fighting like all the people do because of their desire to be God and their identification with their body. So you have to keep, it's not going to come naturally. You have to keep the prayer going. I try my best to do it. I've succeeded a little bit, but so much more to go. So often I forget myself. So we shouldn't be, but we should not despair because we do fail. You keep going. Like a little child that falls down and learning to walk, finally it can walk. No matter how long it takes, we must become genuinely, truly, deeply humble. If we have that, all grace will be attracted to us. Thank you. I think I've said. Well, it's time. The temple president has given me the cut sign, so you can, otherwise he'll really, he's got that dagger. You can come up and I've got to answer you.